from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cuffs. Everything ultimate, from the field to the boardroom.
And welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks. Here again with Dusty Rhodes, of course. How are you today, Dusty?
Doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I wanted to take a minute when we get started here. I think we're going to make a ritual out of this.
Oh, because sweet.
It seems like this is going to be a happening. We're going to recognize our ultimate jerseys of the day. So we'll start. You're wearing one. Can you tell us who we have here today?
This is a jersey from Lame Duck, which is a DC Women's Masters team. It also says Dame Luck on the bottom, as you can see. Obviously joking a little bit about the president, all of that, considering it's a DC sort of team and that sort of thing. Did pretty well last year. They lost in quarters at Women's Masters Nationals to the eventual finals loser. So, did all right. Made up of some ex-scandal players, some other DC area folks, some current scandal players. So yeah, they were one of the teams that I managed to watch a little bit while I was playing in the Masters Championship.
Yeah, very nice. You got to step aside. See, it's obviously you have to reference politics in a DC team of scandal.
Almost can't help yourself.
Lame duck. Yeah.
Yeah. Truck stop is very.
maybe there's something in there. The other one we have is we have Goucher Women's Ultimate. In the back there, so Goucher College, Women's Ultimate. I don't know a whole lot about the team, to be perfectly honest. What I do know, though, is that that's where Paul Desmarais went to school, who was our content manager for a number of years, living out in LA. You know, helped you a lot. A lot of dusty editing.
Very useful to have someone cut down my verbiage.
Yes, a little shortening, if you will, a trimming. And also my mother-in-law works there in the admissions office. So Goucher College, shout out to you guys. And just so you know, and I think you do know this, but we are getting a jersey, and we're not going to talk anything about this yet, but we're getting a jersey from a Polish club team, and I'm very excited about that. I talked to that guy the other day. It's on its way. We'll reciprocate with something nice for him. But yeah, if you want to send us a jersey, and some information about your team, unlike Goucher, we'll talk about you a little bit.
Just to figure out what that was by looking at this. let's identify this by some Facebook post. This jersey seems to be
it's like a Hawaiian shirt. Goucher. That's
well,
it.
Yeah,
is,
that's
yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's actually Kelsey, who works here in the office, was on that team. So, shout out. So let's talk a little bit about current events, what we've been up to the last couple of days. I've been busy. I know you were particularly busy yesterday.
Yeah. So yesterday was the I went and participated in a pub run here in Philadelphia for St. Patrick's Day. I've done this before. I did this a handful of years ago for Tim Johnson's bachelor party, which is an old club teammate of mine, one of my fellow co-captains on Pike for a handful of years. And when we did that originally, only two of us ended up showing up from this bachelor party. So it was the two of us and Tim. We didn't know what we were in for exactly. So the idea is you show up at the Philadelphia Art Museum steps, and you have some Irish coffee. You put down your money for your beverages throughout the day. They take care of ordering them beforehand, so you get to the bar, each one, beverages there. It's always Guinness at each one. About a mile and a half, maybe 2 miles, depending on the course that you take between each bar. And after I'm doing it the first time, the way that I always thought about this is that's the dumbest thing I've ever done that I would willingly do again.
That I would repeat.
Willingly. I mean, there are other dumb things you can make me do. But so this year I repeated it for once and looked to go back again because it's...
That's what I said about every season of Ultimate in Syracuse.
Yeah, so that's actually what I was going to say is that a pub run is really a lot like a Frisbee tournament.
Yeah.
Because you're running this mile or mile and a half and then you're going to sit down, wait for a little while, drink a beer, a Guinness in this case, low alcohol, lots of good vitamins,
I think.
Your body readily absorbs it.
A whole lot of vitamins.
You want to sip your water as well. So, you know, you essentially do 10 miles over the course of this thing, and you drink 7 Guinnesses. To me, the running itself, you really just want to be in the lead group. Why?
Is that the Peloton?
It is, in bicycle.
Okay.
And that's the exact concept that I'm working with, is that you want to be there first so that you can have the most time sitting down.
that's a good strategy. Yeah.
Drinking.
Yeah.
Your Guinness and then your waters. And then so you have the most time to go ahead for the next one. You sit down again inside.
This is smart.
But the most exciting part for me this time is I decided to rank the Guinnesses.
Ah, so I've done this run.
Yes,
as well.
It's a blast.
Like 3 or 4 years back, but this was a long time ago. Yeah, my wife actually did the run with you yesterday too. So,
and it's there are a number of frisbee players who do it.
Yeah,
I think it's right up the alley.
And it
there's
fits.
Fool's Fest is coming up here, which is a classic party and fun. This is a perfect training run for that. So one of the things that you do on this run is we do a lap around Franklin Field.
Yeah.
And usually, unless you get there first.
Yeah, there's a full like track lap.
Yeah, so you do a full 400
which
meters.
Which I never did.
Yeah, so that's
that
the issue.
Time.
If you're not in the first group there, you usually don't get in. So the security guard will stop you from getting in. But when you first get there, you just run in and go.
Yeah.
But the problem is we went around and then we tried to come back out the same entrance and they told us we couldn't go out that way. So we had to run 200 more meters to go out the far way. But so people keep taking shortcuts in these things because
yep.
How
obviously.
Are you going to stop somebody?
Yep.
But you come out of Franklin Field and run down, run back up. And at this point, this is where I spotted your wife, Marie, as well as some other folks who I know didn't do the lap.
And your competitive nature.
And my competitive nature took over that. At this point. And I was like, I got to chase him down. I think I can get up this hill and whatever. Chased him down, started shouting things as I was going by. I was like, you can't be cheating and running out ahead of us. You can't have this. This is like bringing people back to the pack in the Peloton. You got to be in charge.
I like it. So... All right, so let's get into it because, you know, we need time.
Yeah.
Let's hear your Guinness rankings.
We're going to go from
the
worst
2016
to first.
Pub run. Worst
to first.
To first. And these are Philadelphia establishments.
Yes. So if you're looking for someone to hate, I'm not that hard to find.
Yeah.
The first one at the bottom of the list is City Tap House.
City Tap House.
Which actually has probably the best overall selection of
fantastic beer
of
list.
Anyone on here. But their Guinnesses were crap.
You know, I'm going to guess it's because they have so much good beer, they probably don't pour much Guinness. They probably don't pour much Guinness.
But so we're there, it's the first stop, and the Guinness is kind of flat. It's kind of like just sitting there. It's a little over bitter. It's in like, it's all poured and everything, so we don't have to wait. But it's just, it's like the least amount of Guinness that you could properly still call Guinness.
Gotcha.
It's identifiably Guinness.
Okay.
So,
number 7 at City Tap House.
So number 6, which was the, coincidentally, the 6th stop on the way, was Bourbon and Branch.
Bourbon and Branch. Used to be Liberties.
Yes.
Up in Northern Liberties.
And
okay.
This is a solid Guinness.
All right. Solid
Why is it
Guinness.
A solid Guinness? It's the large format can with the
little
fizzy
thing.
Oh,
the nitro can.
And they give you a glass. So,
all right.
Solid.
Yeah.
Number 5, which was also the 5th stop, was Paddy Wax.
This is working out for you.
Yeah. Well, just noticed that this
Paddy Wax, number 5.
It's a decent pour, good head on it, solid Guinness, crap cup.
Okay.
Plastic
bad
cup.
Can't have a bad cup. All right.
Number 4. Kellyanne's. This is the last stop on the route, so they get all kinds of credit for it. They had food ready for us. They had everything. Like,
I love that.
All kinds of credit for that. So this is a perfectly average Guinness.
All right, right in the middle of the pack.
This, yes.
Not going to complain about
average.
It. Not going to celebrate it.
Precisely.
Good. All right.
And so then number 3, which is again the 3rd stop,
mm-hmm.
was Fado.
Okay.
Or as it was called by many people, Fado. Fado.
Fado.
Fado.
Good
Fado.
Place to watch the footy.
Yes, and this is
terrible place on a Saturday night.
It was an above average pour.
Okay.
So the pour was about perfect. It wasn't a perfect pint glass. It wasn't a full like imperial
not
pint
the imperial.
And all of that. Very smooth, very rich.
Okay.
It seemed like they had a lot of practice pouring Guinness there. So number 2, which was the 2nd stop, Sláinte. They had a great Guinness.
Right near 30th Street Station.
Yeah. And this is the one where the construction workers were in there for lunch, and they were like, what are you guys doing in here?
What
is it St. Patrick's?
Go to
they were
work.
Like, yes. Like, but we need to just go back to... Like, we'll get out of here right a second. But so those were all poured very well. It's sweet Guinness. It had, like, it was very
It
obvious.
Was the real
fresh.
Thing. Yeah.
And it was just, oh, this is great. This is the early clubhouse leader for me. This is number 2.
All right.
I
all
didn't
right.
think they were going to be tough. Damn. But then there was number 1.
I know this one.
Plow in the Stars.
Well, I met you there.
And this
and
is
had
where,
this Guinness.
Not only this is where we came into you, but there was also live folk music, and it was great and all of this. But that Guinness was perfectly poured, except for a couple were more overfilled later on. We were passing them all back. This place was crowded. There was all kinds of celebration going on in there. So it was a good time, and that was the best Guinness of the lot, which was also, again, where we ran into you. So at that point, the trip changed a little bit, because I started thinking about what we were going to do for the podcast today, what else we were going to talk about. But on the whole,
who knew we would take 5 minutes on rating Guinness?
Well, I had been thinking about it, but you know, for all these bars, thanks for your help to make this happen. For anybody who's up here in around St. Patrick's Day. Come out 10 o'clock, Art Museum steps. You'll meet up with a lot of Ultimate players. I got to meet some people who have been watching this podcast.
Oh, right on.
The podcast.
That's very
cool.
So I
didn't know by name before. I knew them by their Twitter handles.
But they knew
so
you.
So we got to talk about the Frisbee. It was good. It was a great experience.
Yeah, Marie said she had a great time too. A lot of fun. And I think what, you know, most importantly this illustrates is that no matter what you're doing, you're going to analyze it in a methodical way.
Right.
So I think that's the reason I agreed to this.
I have all kinds
segment.
Of other notes we can go into but those are about pub runs in general.
We'll save those for our other podcast, which is our beer running podcast, and we'll get to it. So
what have you been up to?
So I had a crazy trip. Yeah. So Matt Gray, who's our director of production, and I flew out to the West Coast, the Northwest specifically. The main reason was to just visit the stadiums there and ascertain kind of the technical issues we might have at each place.
This is, by the way, as a quick aside, this is one of the things I learned most once I got to the MLU is what the stadium requirements mean and how important they are to be met.
Such a big deal and so difficult.
Yeah.
So difficult to get all the pieces that you need, the time you need, the type of space you need, the internet connectivity that you need. Getting all those pieces together is tough. And shout out to, you know, David Cucciolapati, who's our ops guy, who had to go hunt all this down.
He's helped me out a number of times back when.
So a lot of respect for that. That's not easy work. But so we went out, and it was great that we did, you know, even from just that perspective, because getting a grasp on what we're dealing with on the ground it's only really possible to do in person.
Yeah.
So we flew out. So the trip was crazy because we flew out. I got up at 4:30 Friday morning.
That's like a normal day.
Standard day. So that meant that Matt must have gotten up at like 3:30 because he came and got me, and then we went to the airport. Flew into Seattle, immediately went and saw one of our stadiums, and then we met up with some people. We interviewed Ben Beener and Isaac Entz, the Frost Giant. That's what they call him.
I didn't know he had a nickname. He's quite large.
He has another nickname, but I'm going to save that for the interview because there's actually an interview piece that we'll get out to. So we did some interviews with them. Met up with Dan Vogel, who's a great guy out there and big help to the league all the time. And he showed us amazing food. I had an oyster the size of my head.
Appetizing to some people?
I wasn't sure it was going to be. I enjoyed it. Matt might be done with oysters.
If you put it in front of me, I'll probably eat it, but I'm not going to choose that.
I also ate something called a gooey duck, which you can look up. G-E-O-D-U-C-K. It's basically just the most disturbing looking clam you've ever seen in your life. I won't go into any more detail. Just Google that.
I have a jersey to wear in the future.
Oh boy. Okay. All right. Future jersey. So we were at that point. You know, we didn't get back to our hotel room until probably midnight. So we were up from 1 o'clock local time to midnight local time, or in Matt's case, a full 24 hours, pretty much. So get up the next day, drive up to Mount Vernon because, of course, Seattle plays Vancouver in Mount Vernon for the Border Bash.
And they do that with the tournament.
With the big tournament.
Bowl, right?
It's not Flower Bowl, Spring Rain.
Spring Rain?
Spring Rain, which is a huge tournament that Dis Northwest does out there. And all the kids come to the game, and it's amazing. It's a youth tournament. So then we went from there up to Vancouver. We caught the Vancouver tryouts. Met the new coach up there, Pat Gatien. I'm sorry, Patrick. I'm saying that wrong. Great guy. Really excited about him. Did an interview with him, with Robin Hughes, their event coordinator. Mm-hmm. Who's been awesome, very new to Ultimate. So finding out what this sport is all about. And we also saw Max Hunter, or Eric Hunter. He goes by both, it seems like. And Graham Barber. And we interviewed a bunch of other players, too. So we'll have a bunch of video footage out of that. Got done with that.
And then?
Drove back down across the border. Slept for a few hours.
No border troubles either way?
No, shockingly
good.
No. Yeah. The guy on the way up was a little rude, but we made it. So we slept for a few hours there, and then we drove all the way down to Portland.
Okay.
So we checked out that stadium. Saw Nathan Schorsch down there, who we love. And, did the whole same thing there. And then Monday went back to Seattle to check out their other stadium. And then we got a chance, and this is the part I'm most... So anyway, whirlwind of tour, then we flew a red eye out and got back Tuesday morning at 6:45 a.m. So Matt and I figured we were up for two chunks of 24-hour periods in a four-day window, which even by my standards, is a little bit aggressive.
Well, it's the consecutive 24 hours. Once you get up for just long enough, you get that second wind.
Oh, yeah.
But then...
And then the third and then the fourth.
The third and the fourth, that starts... The other... You're burning pieces at the end of your life at
yeah.
that point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it was, the other part was that the Northwest sucks it out of you by just raining on you the entire time you're there.
I gotta tell you, every time I go out there, it's sunny and nice.
I don't... That's
you
what I used to say that, and then I found out what it's really like there. But I wanted to get to the thing I really wanted to get to was when we went to Seattle. We had a chance on Saturday morning to talk to Rusty Brown, who is the GM operations manager of the Seattle Rainmakers, mm-hmm. and also the operations manager for Dis Northwest. And he was out running their early spring tournament. Which is just teams. It's rec league kind of stuff, I guess you would call it around here. But they have set teams that just come every year.
Yeah.
Which we don't really have in Philly, but I know exists.
Definitely
in other places.
Do down in DC.
DC has it.
It's one of my favorite things about playing rec league in DC is that
they're great leagues down there.
Choose my teammates a little bit. Yeah. Summer league draft and all of that, but
Pat is fun. They do their thing and that's fun. Yeah. But I also like this idea
it's
of
like the continuity over time.
And I think they do it maybe in fall league or something. Either way. We talked to him for a bit on Saturday, and then on Monday, we caught up with the two coaches for the Seattle Rainmakers, which are Kate Kingery and Fiona McKibben. And
NYU.
Yeah, NYU, correct. NYU and Carleton.
Well, I give more shouts to NYU than Carleton.
I know. They don't need any extra help for Frisbee. and that was phenomenal and instructive, because I knew that Seattle had an amazing ultimate scene. I'd heard Skip Sewell tell me enough times how amazing it was.
And he was far from the only one who harps on that.
And absolutely not wrong. And it was great talking to these guys because I got to dig into it a little more. And we'll put out some interview footage on this and you get to see them actually talk about it. But they have, there's middle school. I mean, there's grade school ultimate. You can play when you're 8, 9, 10 years old. But they have actual middle school teams, actual high school teams playing inter-high school leagues where they meet and they play one game just like
That's
I did.
That's what I was just going to ask.
Just like I did in soccer growing up. They get on a bus. Their school provides them uniforms that
Very
they
nice.
Then take back and keep and provide the next year. Right. So 3 years later, you're wearing some old uniform. But it's fine because you're not paying for them.
Right.
They provide uniforms. They pay the coaches just like they pay the football coach and the soccer coach and the basketball coach. They provide the transportation, and they go and they play games against other schools. There's still some tournaments in there, but it's only one major tournament that they go to kind of at the end of the year, just like you might have when you were in high school playing soccer.
I'm not sure.
We did preseason tournaments sometimes.
We had club soccer tournaments. We didn't have actual high school.
Yeah, high school was more like sectionals sort of thing.
But if you were good at soccer, you weren't playing – high school soccer wasn't – that was kind of secondary, right?
Yeah, you were doing the Olympic development and the travel team.
That was all your big deal.
Yeah, it's true.
Which is why I only played high school soccer. It's very clear that I didn't belong with that other group.
Yeah, all right. but what kept coming up, and I'm like, how are they doing this, right? Because we've seen petitions come from Vermont, from places in the Midwest. Various places are petitioning New York recently.
Yeah.
To get ultimate recognized as a varsity sport in high schools, because for a lot of kids, it seems like, and what I keep hearing from the kids that are putting these petitions forward, there's a big burden put on them in terms of organization, finding a coach, finding field space, getting jerseys,
right.
Managing travel, and they're very interested in having someone take that organization on stuff over, and Seattle has managed to do that. And what kept coming up was the reason they were able to do that is because of coaching. According to, Kate and Fiona, when we were talking to them, almost every player they know coaches. And they coach three teams.
Right.
They coach the varsity girls team in the spring, varsity boys team in the fall, a middle school mixed team. I don't know. They're coaching constantly. And the Rainmakers. Because why not? Let's throw something else out there. And by the way, the Rainmakers are going to be really good because they're smart. Very good. They really are.
So you've seen a little bit of the foundation that they're laying for this coming season?
Oh, man, I watched them coach the high school girls team, and I'm like,
if they're doing that,
they're going to be good. No, they're going to be incredible. But that was the big thing that kept coming back, just coaching, and how coaching feeds the game, and how it feeds kind of the structure of the game, and how it feeds the overall culture. So, and I've been talking a lot. I'm not even making you sit there right now, but I'm going to keep going.
I wasn't in Seattle, so there's no other way for me to find out about
it. I'm filling you in on this. So I started to think about that a lot. I started to think, like, our thing that we're doing in the MLU, but also that is being done with USAU and with AUDL and all these other entities, USA Flatball and the college series and high school
USA
youth
Ultimate
programs.
And all of this.
USA Goldsmith, yes. All that stuff that's being done is trying to take the sport and move it up a level in legitimacy, in recognition, and in participation, right? And it mirrors, you know, I'm a big soccer fan.
I do know that.
Yeah. It mirrors kind of USA Soccer and their goal to move up and change the level of legitimacy of US soccer. And I was listening to Christian Seifert, who's the CEO of the Bundesliga.
Oh.
German soccer.
Yeah, I've just,
you enjoy that.
I watch the Bundesliga just so I'm familiar with the teams that are going on to Champions League. Because as we say many, many times, I only care about soccer for Champions League and World Cup.
Yes,
the rest
I'm
of
aware.
It's all kind of...
I'm aware. I'll win you over
play,
at some
play
point.
With the big boys or go home. You know, play for your country or what's it worth.
Yeah, true. Fair. Fair. We'll get into that further. But anyway, Seifert was saying that, you know, the thing that German soccer did when it was trying to revitalize itself, and because they went through a period where they were having trouble, was they identified coaching as the primary issue.
Yeah.
Because the key to growing a league is to find and educate talent. So they were successful in this. I mean, there's 7 teams in the Champions League, which
right.
you love, and 6 of them are coached by Germans.
Right.
You know, there's English Premier League teams in there, but none of them are coached by
Then there's the United States men's national team.
Also
coached by a
German. They make a lot of nice coaches. This is what we're saying. And he also mentioned that, you know, China a little bit ago was like, hey, we want soccer to be a thing in China. Much in the same way we're saying we want Ultimate to be a thing here, right? Bigger thing. They wanted soccer to be a thing in China. So the very first thing they did was go out and train 300,000 coaches. Because it's China.
The scale's just
the scales. Scales.
There might be even more if it were India, is what you were saying. We'd need to train even more Ultimate coaches
even,
right to start.
You'd have to start, yeah, that's how you begin.
But so my question here that just came up when I was thinking about this is, so China's training these coaches from the top down, certainly. So they've got sort of an idea of what they want from each of those coaches. But if you look at it on a club level, you'd be selecting coaches that are specific for your club's playing style or what your overall, you know, gestalt wants to be as a team. Like, what are you aiming for? Do you want to be really aggressive defensively? Do you want to possess on offense? Like, what's your goal and what are you trying to build sort of long term? So when we're talking about Seattle and you have all of the different players coaching, so if you have mixed players, women's players, and men's players, if you have all of them coaching, are they all coaching the same style? Are they all using the same guidebook? Like, what sort of mixture do you end up with there?
It's a really interesting question, actually. And I would love to hear more from people in Seattle. Maybe we can get somebody on and do a bit of an interview. That'd be really cool. We can work that out. Greg, you can do this for us.
we can start booking guests.
Greg Fallon, our production manager here, he can take care of that.
I mean, part of that is you talk about different areas of the U.S., and we have different styles of play for different areas. Like, speaking broad terms, obviously, you have, like, the Boston style, which is very measured. It's not that they don't take shots or whatever, but you would identify a Boston player differently than you would identify a North Carolina player, than you would identify an Atlanta player or Philadelphia player or a Seattle player, or like the Bay Area may just have too many Ultimate players to make any generalized statements about. But it's these sort of things where, what sort of styles are we developing, and what sort of consistencies across those different teams do you end up with?
And I think that's an interesting discussion to have. But I think more importantly, from this perspective, is the fact that you're actually developing something.
Right.
And I think that's where this coaching thing has come into play in Seattle. Are the styles meshing? Is everybody working on the same book? Is everybody sort of like doing the same thing? I don't know.
No.
Probably not, to be honest, right? But what they're doing is they're identifying and educating talent. And that's a thing that is at the core of growing a sport. you have to have somebody going out there and finding people who are good at it, like who have the raw talent. Because there's tons of talent in every one of these cities. Even cities that have lagged behind on the national level in terms of their participation in the club series or in the national teams, even those areas have plenty of talent. It's the ability to identify and educate it that they lack. And so when we talk about coaches and the need for coaches, we're really talking about a specific kind of coach that we need. And not that specific, maybe, but there is a type of coach we need. It's a coach that's interested in player development.
Right.
It's Will Smolinski, right?
Right.
it's what I saw in Seattle.
It's the difference between maximizing what you can get out of the players that you have versus trying to maximize those individual players and then sorting out what you have later. It's not that you can't do both.
Sure.
Best coaches do both.
Yeah.
And every coach that we mentioned here does some part of each thing. But when we talk about coaches, it's the coach who says, you know, I see that player make 7 cuts and I can tell you whether that player should be playing at the highest level or not. That's the coach that you want managing in game. That's not necessarily the coach that you want to develop that player, because they don't have the possibly even false belief that that player can be better.
Mm.
If you are a coach who looks at a player and all you see is the possibility and the things that they can be, you're a developmental coach. You want to make that player into something else, as opposed to seeing them as individual tools that you use on the field and you deploy in one way or the other.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, I saw this particularly with Fiona when I spoke with her, is that she grew up in the Seattle system. Yeah. So she came up through that. And I think that there's a thing there, because you're starting kids in middle school or even younger, there's an idea that, you know, you can't not look at the possibility. Otherwise, you're not going to see anything.
Right.
Because
right.
all there
it's
is
youth players. Right?
All there is possibility there, right? You know, or not. I mean, some people just can't play. We know this is true. But all there is possibility. And I think that right now, with our sport, you know, our best resource for coaches are players. Right now, you know, if you're still in the game and you're still playing. The people who go and get back, and there's tons of people that do this. I don't want to in any way say there aren't tons of people that do this. They're our best resource. But I think that what I'd like to see, and what I wonder how much focus is on, is how much of that focus is on that talent identification and education in the game, in developing the talent specifically. I think the cultural stuff around Ultimate is really good, and I feel like coaching often focuses a lot on that.
Yeah.
But we love that part of Ultimate as players.
So it makes it all work.
Yeah. But I'm curious as to how much sort of systematic understanding there is of developing talent in its raw form.
When we talk about that, who teaches the coaches how to find and develop talent?
Mm.
Who is the coach that they learned how to do that from? Or did they learn how to do that? Or are they just assuming that they know how to and they'll figure it out as they go? Like, lots of folks are smart enough to do that and are diligent enough to put in the work. But if we talk about coaching in other sports, you often talk about like coaching trees. So you talk about like a specific head coach that has had whatever types of assistants, and then those assistants tend to eventually want to go get their own head coaching job. So they're from like to use basketball as my standard crutch when I talk about sports, I talk about the Greg Popovich coaching tree. All of those coaches aren't successful coaches, but they have a general understanding that mirrors or works out of or is in reflection to what Popovich started. So when we talk about soccer, for example, different clubs have different personalities that they manifest on the field, and a decent amount of that has to do with their academies. Like, starting at the youth level, they're trying to identify and develop talent when people are 4, 5, 6. And is that always the right time to do it? Not necessarily.
That might feel a little early.
Right, but are you trying to develop a world-class talent, or
right.
are you trying to develop people who can play some soccer? And these are different things. So if you talk about like Barcelona, they not only seek out and find the best players all over the world and bring them to their academy, they're also finding all of the great Spanish players, bringing them to their academy, teaching them a very specific style of play and an understanding of the field that goes back generations within that organization.
And they would argue teaching them a very a cultural thing as well.
Yes,
like they pride themselves on graduating people who go on to have jobs when they can't make
right,
it in soccer,
right.
Because only a certain percentage make the first team. You know,
right. And but that's when we talk about the value of sport. It's that value we mentioned before: diligence, like hard work, believing that you can do this, believing that it's worth your time to invest in. And every coach, whether we're talking about Ultimate, whether we're talking about soccer, basketball, or any sport, yeah, you want to be near the game and whatever, but the other thing that you get is you're giving back to people who are having some of the same experiences you had. You're helping them, like, find their way through these difficult patches and see the next step and think about not just the sport, but what does this sport mean for my life? Like, what are all of these things? What are these lessons that I learn when I'm playing Frisbee that, you know, are in the back of my head when I'm walking around in regular life?
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think, I mean, this is like an endless topic. We could go on forever, and we're kind of running low on time. We're running a little bit low on time, but I kind of want to pursue this topic further. And, you know, we'd like people to reach out to us. If you coach, if you have experience in this, you have some input on this, we could set up some interviews, or we can at least have conversations that we can relay information from. So definitely reach out to me at Nick Darling, N-I-C Darling. And
you can also reach out to me at D-U-S-T-W-E-E-T-R, Dustweeter, Dusty Roads. Not that hard to find, usually.
Usually,
Google will go a long way.
Yeah, a little Google goes a long way.
I'm not the American Dream. It's an old wrestler. I'm not a baseball player from the 50s, not a pinch hitter. Aside from that, you're going to narrow it down really quickly. I don't sell cars. But, you know.
You'll find them. You'll find them.
Coaching conversations, I could have those all day, every day. I find it a fascinating thing.
And frankly, from a selfish perspective, in that I want my business to do really well in the long run. Like, I want this league to be successful, and I want the talent to keep growing and keep building up. Coaches are the key, and getting kids into the sport early is the key. And I think it's a great sport for kids too. I mean, I have kids. I'd love them to play the sport. You know, I'd much rather play it than football. It's a great sport, and if we can introduce this earlier, it's accessible, it's affordable, it's fun, it's a little lower on the entry scale than some other sports. And I'm going out on Monday to teach some kids. And
you?
Yeah, well, I'll
teach them the flag,
I'm bringing people who are better.
that's
I'm going to go watch some people who are good at ultimate teach some kids. It'll be a lot of fun. But reach out to us. Tell us what you think. We'd love to get more questions. And if you want to come on the show and you've been doing some coaching, let's find a way to get you in here. We'll set up a Skype interview or something fun like that.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah. And that's all the time we have for today.
All right.
Till next time, that's Cleats and Cufflinks.